Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents Diet Starts Tomorrow with host Sammy Sage.
I'm having a relationship with my pizza.
And Aileen Drexler.
I'm gonna make you girls a hump day treat.
In a world where wellness looks perfect on Instagram.
Just doing my workout. Tuesday's arms and back.
But feels anything but in real life.
Is butter a carb?
Yes.
This is the podcast exploring the emotional side of well-being.
I would be proud to partake of your pecan pie.
From people who understand the struggle.
I am on the third day of my cleanse diet.
Hello and welcome back to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Aileen.
And we have a very exciting guest today. Some of you may know her because I had her on Afternoon Tea, and a lot of you had a great response to our episode. Today's guest is Holly Whitaker, author of the book Quit Like a Woman and founder of Tempest, an organization that takes a new approach to helping individuals quit drinking and live an alcohol-free life. Welcome back, Holly.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to have you back. People really loved our last episode together when you came on Afternoon Tea. So this should definitely be an interesting continuation because we definitely talk a bit about drinking on here, usually as it ties to like weight loss and dieting. But also as, you know, how people's relationship with it is.
So can you share maybe a bit about your journey with alcohol? Just from the day one.
Sure. Okay. So day one, I was probably 13 when I drank for the first time. And I drank throughout high school. I think that one of the things I talk about in the book is that it was never really a comfortable relationship. I think there were benefits that were provided me by it, meaning in terms of fitting in or getting past my inhibitions or my awkwardness or figuring out how to have connections with men. But I would say, you know, for I was 33 when I quit drinking. And so it means, you know, 20 years in there and really probably like 15, 17 years where I was drinking regularly and my relationship with it was complicated. I think like all of our relationships, not all, but I think a lot of us have a really complicated relationship with alcohol because it's a depressant, feels anxiety, it's tied to all these different things. And we're really conditioned to put up with a lot. And so for me, I had, you know, my relationship would sometimes go off the rails with it, I'd reel it back in, go off the rails. And really in when I was about 30, I was living in San Francisco. I had a really stressful job. I broke up with somebody and it was pretty devastating. And I tipped from drinking a lot, right? From living in San Francisco, I'd go to sometimes like three events in a night, you know, and drink at each of them. I drank, you know, multiple days throughout the week and I had hangovers, but it was never anything that I would, you know, I would say would really qualify as like in spectrum alcohol use disorder. But when I was in my early 30s, I hit the spot and my relationship with it really like flipped, jumped the shark. And, I ended up, you know, drinking one or two bottles a night. And it just from there, it's a real slippery slope. And, I think that for me, it really came to a head in 2012, 2013. And forgive me, I do not know how old I was then, but 32, 33. And I felt like I started to really hit that wall of recognition that something's terribly wrong. And I think one of the things that I really like to expand upon and dive into is what a mind scrabble that is to try and to just because there's things that you see in your life that can justify that it's just normal and that you're doing what everyone else is doing and everyone else is struggling with it in the same way you are. We all have hangovers, we all do things that we regret, we all drink too much when we don't mean to, we all drink more than we don't mean to, and also like pulling apart really what is a problem. And I was constantly looking toward this definition of whether or not I qualified as an alcoholic. And I think one of the things I really try and stress that relieved me from my relationship with alcohol was just asking if it felt good, and it didn't. It felt horrible. And so the long story short was I read a book in late 2012 that really reframed the idea of alcohol as something that you don't have to do. And I got the understanding that I had been working under the impression that I was supposed to make alcohol work. And that really started to unwind it for me. And from there, I started to observe. I started to see how it showed up in my life. I did not like it, and entered into a period of recovery. And I say all this, this is a pretty like sterile reconstruction of all that. It was really graphically bad. I had severe alcohol use disorder. I was sick, and it was making me extremely sick. And I went through a pretty severe recovery to quit drinking. But I want to get to the meat of it, which was it was a long path to getting to that conclusion, and a long path from that conclusion.
Yeah, and I know we've talked about the book, and I do want to say just to the audience, like, the way that Holly goes into it in the book is really graphic and detailed and honest, in a way that I think a lot of people probably don't speak about their, you know, the details and the realities of their issues. But so something you mentioned was questioning whether or not you were quote unquote an alcoholic. Could you talk a little bit about what it means to you to be sober, but how you don't really embrace or don't embrace the title or the identity of an alcoholic?
Yeah. And so there's a reason for that. So with alcohol, right, there is a specific disease that we've categorized. We basically are under the impression, and we work under the impression, that there's a certain fraction of the population that's inherently alcoholic, and that we won't know if they're alcoholic until they consume the drug. And then from there, it is a set of self-diagnosed indicators that qualify of whether or not you have this condition. And so when we do that, and there's a lot of reasons for this, but when we do that, we're specifically operating under the impression that alcohol is fine, except for alcoholics. Instead of looking at it like we do every single other psychoactive drug, every single other addictive substance, which is that the substance itself is inherently addictive, toxic, and that we should all be moving through our relationship with it eyes wide open. But instead, we've created this category of sick people that we find out after the fact, and we then let big alcohol off the hook. We then really are lost in this confusion of, am I this like very, very specific, severe example versus being able to look at our relationship with it. And so the term alcoholic is something that says there's just something wrong with people that can't digest ethanol, right? The same alcohol is made from the same substance that we use to fuel cars with, and the same thing we've been sanitizing our hands to kill a virus with. And so it's like, it's pulling it back to understand that when you ingest this substance, it's going to make you sick if you do it at increasing levels, and it has the probability of addicting you based on other factors that play into it. And so it just sets it against the rest of what we do. It's far more about informed consent. So I don't know if that answers your question specifically, but it does, I think, drill into this idea of this like alcoholic being out there versus us all having a relationship with alcohol that we go into with eyes wide open. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask you about something you also said about you just kind of coming to the realization that you don't like your relationship with alcohol? What does that look like or feel like? And is it possible to like your relationship with alcohol? And what would that look like?
Well, I think it's interesting because if you pull it apart, like if you look at like Annie Grace's work or Alan Carr's work, they really say that we've all been tricked into this belief that like of the what we call benefits of alcohol. And I'm not going to go into that. Their work is extremely important and I think interesting for everybody to really consider. I think you can look at it like anything, right? Like I I think we, like, one of the first things that I always try and level set with this is, like, can we, what would you ask me that if we're talking about cocaine, right? Would you ask me that if we're talking about cigarettes? Like, so let's take it with cigarettes. Is it possible to like your relationship with cigarettes? Sure. Is it doing damage to you? Probably. And so I think we can, like, there were things I liked about alcohol, right? I absolutely loved getting a good buzz on. I loved being stupid drunk. I loved the way that you could just immediately hurtle through, like, awkwardness on a first date, you know, and get right to the meat of it. Like, there are things that alcohol does, that we find benefit of. But if you start to, like, for me, it was, those benefits are so, so overshadowed by all of the negative that absolutely comes along with this. And so it is a drug. It is a depressant. It is something that will increase your depression if you have it. It is something that will fuel your anxiety if you're an anxious person, or if you have social anxiety, or if you have any form of anxiety. It's something that causes cancer. It's something that causes brain damage. It's something that does a lot of different things to us. And so I think, that there, you can look at it. I can say, like, I absolutely liked, you know, pieces of it. I'm sure there are people that, you know, drink an extreme moderate amount of it that like it, but it also is, something that I think has to be weighed against the consequences that really no one is safeguarded against.
It feels like cat food has been the same forever. Smelly, boring, made of mystery ingredients. That's why you've got to try Smalls. Smalls cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free ingredients you'd find in your fridge. And it's delivered right to your door. Make the switch from kibble and give your cat a meal they'll love. We actually sent some to my friend who is fostering kittens, and it is the only thing they will eat. It comes in these pate packages, and you scoop it, and you just feel like you're a chef for your baby kitties, and they j'adore it. Your cute kitty is descended from ferocious desert cats who hunted live prey. Even if your cat prefers to nap all day, they still need fresh, protein-packed meals for a balanced and healthy diet. Other brands fill their food with mysterious meat byproducts, artificial flavoring, and preservatives with names I don't even want to try to pronounce. After switching it up to Smalls, 90% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. That's major. The team at Smalls is so confident your cat will love their product that you can try it risk-free. That means they'll completely refund you if your picky cat won't eat their food. Now is the time to make the switch to Smalls. Head to smalls.com/DST and use promo code DST at checkout for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you have to use my code DST for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code DST for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping, baby.
Could you talk a little bit about what it means to quit like a woman, which is sort of like the thesis of your book, as compared to sort of like how we know most people do tend to quit alcohol, which is like go cold turkey, go to AA, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And so everything that was invented up through this, save for a few things like Women for Sobriety, was based on a male archetype. And in my book, I really go into this. Like all religions, like all spiritual traditions that we know of were basically created around, created for men, and created for how men moved in the world. And one of the pieces of work that I draw from in talking about specifically what it means to quit like a woman is Carolee Flinders' work, who really was able to drill down into, she was a Buddhist nun. She lived on, I don't want to say compound. What am I trying to say? She lived on why can't I think of the name of it? It's not a compound. Commune. Yeah, she lives in a commune. Yeah, monastery. She lives in a commune under like Ignaz Ezwerin. And she was also a feminist scholar and a professor, I think, at Berkeley. And so she really had to pull apart the things that she was taught in her training as a Buddhist. And how, why they felt so at odds with her own feminism. And she drills down into the tenets of Buddhism, but of all spiritual traditions that we know of that exist in the world today that are based on a belief of male privilege and really, are meant to, you are meant to find liberation essentially by confronting things that are typically personified in male privilege. And that means not speaking. That means like silence, chosen silence and introspection. That means abiding by the rules instead of creating the rules. That means closing yourself off from the world, which assumes that you've been able to move around the world freely without fear. And so she really like says, in feminism says, we're supposed to like breaking the rules or break, like feminism basically encourages us to move freely about in the world, to take our power back, to speak, to like trust ourselves, to do all of these things. So when you look specifically at what the traditional recovery modalities that we now know of, and that, you know, by the way, this is not a specific thing about AA, it's just about the foundations of how we think of recovery. It's created based on a evangelical Christian framework. It was made specifically for white, cis, hetero males in the 30s. And it was created as a way to really counter what was making them sick, which was their male privilege. And so a lot of the fundamental beliefs in how we recover are shutting up and listening and not trusting ourselves, of like taming our wild, out of control egos, humiliating ourselves, like humbling ourselves, taking direction, going out and apologizing to everybody. And so really the fundamental, you know, point of it is not, you know, to reject AA. It is to be very aware of what we've traditionally been sold as almost like the antithesis of what women need when they're recovering, which is to claim their voice, claim their power, move freely, question the rules, listen to themselves, and so on and so forth. And so that really is what the fundamental piece of this, which is like looking at a feminine archetype, understanding what any like marginalized person, anybody that's not white, male, cis, hetero, might be encountering, and then building something that makes sense from there, not breaking down something they don't have to begin with.
In the book, do you share like then what you should do? Because we have a friend, she told me it's okay to shout her out, that read your book, and she, you know, she was, before that she was questioning her relationship with alcohol, and then your book made her sort of set her like tipped her over to really like explore what being sober is like without, again, like you said, considering herself an alcoholic, just kind of exploring it in social situations and all of that. So she wanted a shout out. But also in the book, do you share tips for audience who haven't read it about what it is like to explore a sober lifestyle?
Yeah. And it's not a prescriptive book, right? Like it's not a like workbook that's going to give you like the full plan. But I do go into the second half of the book is mostly going into really helping to create frameworks. And the thing that you said is how should. So that's kind of part of it as well, which is there is no should, right? Part of what makes us sick to begin with is this belief in we should be all these things. And a lot of the book really centers on this idea that our process to getting to truth, to heal, it starts with really creating something that is specific to ourselves, that develops agency, that helps us to develop agency, that helps us to really craft what works for us. And it draws on, so my work draws on, Ken Wilber's framework, which just basically is a holistic framework. And so there are formulae, prescriptive things that are given in the book, but the basic idea of this is to almost work at it from the opposite angle, which is starting to develop trust with self, crafting a plan that feels like it's something that's expansive that we can grow into versus restrictive, and more, you know, lists of things to do or not do.
Could you talk a little bit about how you could like start to approach creating an expansive life rather than a restrictive one? Like, how do you handle, like, how could someone like now start to approach social situations? Like, what sort of like patterns in their actual day to day should they examine?
Well, I think it all starts with beliefs, and that's where it really comes down to, right? So a lot of this stuff, a lot of people, like for us, humans. We want the plan. We want the structure. We want the like checklist. And I think a lot of it starts with the recognition that once you start to even question or to look at something and shift your thinking around something, you're opening this huge door. And we can't even understand in that moment how big of a shift that is. But that in of itself, the questioning, the observing, the researching, and the willingness to have our beliefs changed or to change our own beliefs or to evolve is in of itself part of the process. And we don't reward ourselves enough or appreciate enough how phenomenal that is. And from there, it starts with working with your core beliefs. So one of the things that I think is really important to understand is whether it's alcohol or if it's a thing that has you nailed, right? Like if it's a thing you have a thing with, right? No matter what it is, right? And I'm talking, it could be a relationship. It could be drinking. It could be cigarettes. It could be your job, whatever it is. When we have a thing that has us nailed, right, that we're really hooked into, when we start to go into that place that we typically run from and we start to examine it, what happens is that one shift, especially if it's a place we're really nailed, will start to basically pull different threads throughout our life because it's one big web, right? It's all woven together. So in alcohol specifically, let's just say you are exploring it, you're thinking about it like your friend, right? Like you're changing, you're like open to changing your belief system around it. And maybe you try not drinking on the weekends or something, or you just even like, I don't know, what doesn't matter. You start to pull that thread. And what happens is because it's so connected to the rest of your life, what you find is it starts to reveal things in your friendships. And so you learn new ways to explore your friendships, or maybe your friendships change completely. When you're out and just doing your normal thing of being at a happy hour and you have a drink and someone offers you a drink, you're in that position. For me, what was so interesting just about that one thing in particular was I was so used to pacifying other people and making, you know, and putting other people's comfort first and over explaining myself and giving them my whole story. When I was like, no, I'm not drinking. And then people would react to that. That alone caused me to start establishing boundaries with what information I share, what questions I answer, whose comfort I'm putting first. How to, you know, basically move through situations that we often just mechanically work through. It throws a wrench in everything. And all of a sudden, all of those things that are connected, you start moving through differently.
So just one last question before we move on to Dear DST, we're going to answer a listener question. Could you describe the emotional feeling when something has you nailed? Like, how can someone identify that they have this relationship that they need to work on?
Because you know it. I don't know how to explain it other than that. It's just, you know it. It's your thing, right? And we don't have just one thing. We typically have a number of things. And there's usually one that's screaming the loudest. But it's like, it's the thing that you can't shake. It's the thing that feels like it's living in your head, or like showing up everywhere. And it's a matter of just trusting that if something feels that way, if there's a rub, it's just even a rub, that it's worth exploring.
Okay. That sounds like
Does that make sense?
I think if someone has it, they'll know it by what you said.
I always say people that don't have drinking problems are not on the internet researching about drinking problems, right? Like my mom has never Googled, am I drinking too much? Right?
Yeah.
Like for a lot of us, it's just like, there is a thing there and you're like, huh, you know?
Right.
So,
and sometimes it is a relationship. Like there's definitely like, I've observed, you know, people who have had that type of relationship, like a codependent relationship
it's
like something that you can't imagine like a life beyond it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Is a good, yeah. I think. Yeah. Like you can't really believe that you could ever be free of this thing, whatever it
That's
is.
Right. Or it's just part That's of right. your personality and you just always assumed it was. And then like you question, but what if it wasn't? And then that sticks with you.
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Newly. Newly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Newly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Newly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there, and they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life, so it's great to be able to rent them. Newly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles, but right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Newly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Newly, that's NUULY.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Newly with two U's, with code DST20. Newly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
All right, should we do our Dear DST now?
It's time.
It is time. I can read it, Sammy.
Okay.
Dear Sammy and Aileen and Holly, quarantine has obviously been such a crazy time, and I don't even know what I've been doing for the past year plus. But one thing I know is I've been drinking a shit ton, and alcohol has become the center of my life in a way it's never been before. Memorial Day just happened, and summer has just begun, and I realize my nightly habits have become all about drinking, or even immediately after I'm done with my main work responsibilities, I'll start drinking. Not only is alcohol making me sleep worse and giving me headaches in the morning, it is also causing me to drunk eat nightly, which has been causing me some stress as the summer and bikini season are approaching. 2 years ago, I didn't have this problem, and I was not having a drink every night, but now after the pandemic, I'm realizing I'm a little scared to take on the summer in my post-quarantine drunk body. I've been asking myself these questions. Am I drinking more because I'm self-conscious about the weight I've gained? Will I continue drinking this much into summer and start socializing more and act in a way that I'll regret? Please let me know what you think. Love, drunk bitch. What do we think?
Yeah. Well, first, I do want to say that I really relate to her, like, first paragraph, because it's what I talked about last week with weed. And Holly, we've also spoken about this. Like, that's mm-hmm. how I feel that my relationship with weed has become. It's again, it's a different substance, so different navigations, but same idea. I think that, again, if she's asking herself, like, if it's too much, like, it probably is a little too much. That's, like, mm-hmm. kind of the answer. And whether it's because she's self-conscious about her weight or because it's something else, my guess is that it probably ties in to the same thing. Like, maybe why she started drinking in the first place was because she was self-conscious about her weight, not just, like, her pandemic right. weight. Or, like, other feelings of, like, lack of self-acceptance, maybe.
Holly, how are you seeing that, like, people are drinking a little more or a lot more, or changing their habits since quarantine? And do you think that sort of facing that, the way that Drunk Betch has emailed us, is the same or similar when facing, like, a longer span of, like, drinking a lot?
I think that quarantine really, people drink a lot more in quarantine. I mean, there's just that, right, for a number of different reasons. People also quit drinking in quarantine because it moved us into this loss of time and routine. And we were encouraged, like, there were so many reasons why we all drank more, but for some people they went with it. And for some people it was where they encountered, a trajectory they did not want to be on. So you see stats of, like, how much addiction has gone up and drinking has gone up, but you also see stats of people that are, who might not have otherwise changed their drinking. In quarantine. So yeah, that's absolutely happening. And I think what's so interesting about what she's writing, I mean, like, and also what you just said, Sammy, like, there is, it's all kind of connected. It just is. Like, we, like, our stuff is layered on itself. And so I think it is extremely telling that like where this comes out the other end is about her body, about how her body's going to look coming out of quarantine, and about how she drinks to deal with that. But I think the thing that I would pull it back to is like starting, I think a lot of times we're overwhelmed with the number of things that we have to fix because we're told we have to fix everything. And I think that what drinking makes, like the thing that I've always loved about encountering a relationship with alcohol when it starts to speak to us like that, is that you really only have to go there. You do not have to fix the body issues. You don't have to fix the eating disorder. You don't have to fix all of the millions of things that you feel that you have, like you have to fix about yourself. If you start to explore and pull the thread of what your relationship is with drinking, it's going to unwind all of those other things, because the awareness that you get around your relationship with that is what starts to help you, give you the ground to explore your relationship with other stuff.
Right. What do you, about her question about, will I continue drinking this much into the summer and start socializing more and act in a way that I'll regret? I do think it's funny that she's asking us that.
Yeah.
Because like we can't see the future, really, and the future hasn't happened yet. Like, you are the one who designs that, who answers right. that question. And I know that that probably is a scary answer to get, because you're like, oh fuck, I can't blame it on anything. Like, you know, I can't blame it on Mercury in retrograde. I can't blame it on right. like something else. Like, she is looking at it. It almost seems like she already knows the answer.
Yeah.
And she's looking at us to be like, yeah, if you keep doing this, you will act in a way you regret, so that she has like a reason to stop, because we tell right. we told
what
her.
Do you
like,
think, what do you think is step one for her to unpack her questions? Like, her, what, like, what should she do to like, she should listen to us tell her, but what should be step one to like unpack this, these layered on feelings and questions?
I think like the simplest thing is, and it goes back to what I said earlier, it's, we're so smart and we have so much information at our fingertips. And when you start to pull the thread and explore and research, I always tell everybody, like, first of all, you've already started, right? Like, give yourself the credit for actually having written the letter or like had the awareness around it at all, because so many people do not. And then from there, it starts with just researching it. I'm like, if you make the intention to explore your relationship with alcohol without putting any qualifiers on it, I'm just going to pull this thread, it will lead you to the answers that you need. And so I always say, start with research or start with support or something. Just reach out and do one thing that's maybe a little bit scary, that is like, if whether it's reading a book or reading a blog or listening to a podcast or going to some kind of, and it doesn't have to be an AA meeting. There's lots of different organizations that allow for people to come together to talk about their drinking. Just do one thing. And then that one thing compounds and folds into the net.
Definitely. I just want to say that I really relate a lot to like actually the second half of the question, Sammy, which is like back maybe like post-college, I was just drinking, and in college obviously, but post-college I was drinking so much to the point like where it was okay to black out. And then I was like, there's something wrong here. But I look, like you said, like be a little bit more introspective about like your individual, like what was I feeling? And it wasn't that I liked alcohol that much, that I was drinking it so much. So why was I doing that? And it was because I was feeling very self-conscious and meeting guys or like just being in that social post-college social scene. And then I had to like look back and like, why am I self-conscious? Is it body stuff? So then I started a lot of dieting, and now it takes, there's lots of stages. And now I'm looking back and like dieting wasn't the right thing. Maybe there's more under that. Maybe I don't really like the relationship I have with my body. Dieting or not, sober or not, whatever it is. So it's just, it's, I wouldn't even say like, this is like a short-term process to drunk betch. It takes right. a while. And that doesn't mean it doesn't mean it's wrong. Like, it's just, that's the way that life is. Learning about yourself just takes a long time. So I just, yeah.
Forever, right?
That's the whole
like
point
it's
of life.
Forever journey. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
What you said about how like it's also layered on top of itself, like ever since reading your book and like discovering that and like actually having the opportunity to observe myself sort of like in action, I feel like I've noticed so many things just about myself, the way sort of like socializing functions, how crucial alcohol really is to all these interactions that we just sort of like take for granted. And you sort of think like, and sort of what you said before, like if there was like a cocaine bar at every event, like that would be so weird. So yeah,
Were trained to believe that cocaine bars were normal, right?
Right.
We've been trained to believe like cocaine is this one thing and alcohol is this other thing.
Right. Yeah. So it's definitely been really interesting.
The weird part for me right now, I'm in my own social drinking experiment, is that I'm pregnant and I have been. So I looked back and I haven't drank since December and I'm like, this is insane. Like, and being in social situations, I'm like, it's so weird to talk to people just completely sober. I have to come up with conversations. Yeah. It's very bizarre. But also the part that I find even more interesting is this, like, just accept, like, I don't worry about what people think when I say I'm not drinking. And I question, like, if I wasn't pregnant, how much more self-conscious I would be to say the exact same line, the way that I would say it, I'm not drinking, or I'll just have Pellegrino or whatever my fancy drink
is. That's
right. I do question that. And I'm assuming it, just society and like social situations are such like a huge pressure on people. Like if that was removed, I feel it'd be so much easier.
But let me point, can I add a story to that? So I'm in Italy. One of my friends is off drinking and has been since January. And we were at a party the other night with a bunch. It was like the first party because Italy just came out of their, like they just started getting to hang out with each other a couple weeks ago. We were at a party and it was a bunch of American expats. And she was not drinking. And I have no weirdness around it. Like I went through a period of time where when I was telling people I didn't drink and I was unsure about like the whole thing and I wasn't really resolved in it, where it happened all the time. It was like flies to shit. People coming to me, do you want to drink? Why are you not drinking? This like shoving like from all angles. And I don't experience that anymore because my energy and my boundaries around it, it's just not a charge. But I was at this party and none of them were used to her not drinking and the whole party lost their shit. It was just like one after the other, after the other. And like this one person saying, oh, you will drink, like literally saying, you're going to drink again. Don't you worry, you're going to drink again. And it was just like, I was shocked by it because I do believe, by the way, like I think that this is not a negative. I think that this was one of like my sources of power was having to be confronted with that, like over, like that discomfort of being pressured to drink and to explain myself, and finally having it hit me enough times to where I changed, and to where now, and that extends to other areas of my life where I created these different set of boundaries where it's just not anything to me anymore. And so I actually think that that is such a positive because it's a really good training ground.
Yeah, I think it definitely like is the hardest thing to quit because of back to what you said earlier, like it's so normal. And it's like saying you're going to quit food almost. Like,
yeah.
It's just like, yeah.
Why?
It's, and other things,
like,
right? Right. And like other things just don't invite that sort of question
no.
at all. Or like that reaction no. also, because most things don't sort of ring a little bell in the person who you're conversing with's head that it's like, oh my God, you're quitting. Like, I drink more than you
right.
or the same as you. Or I've actually been thinking maybe I drink too much and now I have to like ding, ding, answer that. Like,
yeah. Well, because so, it's all just projection. We're all mirrors and they're just seeing like the interaction where people are really, really like freaked out by it is because they're freaked out by it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Holly. How can people quit like a woman, or if they're interested, how can they read your book and also maybe share about Tempest too, maybe if sure. people are interested?
Sure. So my book can be found on bookstore.org. It can be found at your local independent booksellers. It can be found on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all places where books are sold, Quit Like a Woman. You can also find my work and writing at hollywhittaker.com. Yeah, that's right. And then also Tempest is a modern digital approach to recovery. And it is an online program that provides coaching, support, community, materials, practices, lectures, and all sorts of different things for people that are interested in changing their relationship with alcohol. And Tempest can be found at jointempest.com.
That sounds great. Everyone go check that out if you're interested. And that is it for today's episode of Diet Starts Tomorrow. Guys, please go rate, review, subscribe, tell a friend about this show. We really, really would appreciate it. Follow at Diet Starts Tomorrow. Follow me at Aileen. Follow Sammy at Sammy. And we're always with you.
Through thick and thin.
Diet Starts Tomorrow is produced by Sean Kilby and Jorge Morales Pico. Editing by Stacey Wong and Sean Kilby. Social media by Sydney Rafe. Guest booking by Nicole Pellegrino. Be sure to follow at Diet Starts Tomorrow on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to dst@betches.com. Betches.